Hey, it's Kristen. You're listening to Rational in Portland.
Welcome to Rational in Portland. I'm your host, Kristen. I'm here to talk to you all, and actually have other people who know far more about this, talk to you all about something really important that's going to be coming up on the ballot. Is this going to be coming up in November?
Yes, this November.
Okay. So I've got Betsy Johnson, who I think almost everybody who listens to this show knows who she is. She ran for governor, of course, as a independent, made national and international news for, I think, how close somebody who was running as an independent came to a Democrat and a Republican running, particularly a Democrat. And this is in a closed primary state. So Betsy, thanks for coming back on the show. And then we also have somebody that Betsy knows from the legislature, as a lot of people know. Betsy spent time in the legislature. And the reason that this came to my attention, what we're about to talk about, is because of Angela here. Angela, can you talk to us about, can you introduce yourself to us and tell us what we're here to talk about?
Yeah, thanks for having me. My name's Angela Wilhelms. I'm the president and CEO of OBI, or Oregon Business and Industry. OBI is a statewide membership association. We represent businesses of all sizes, all types, all industries, and from each of Oregon's 36 counties in state-level politics and government. And what we're talking about today is Measure 118, which will be on the ballot this November, a decision, a very important decision before Oregon voters. It's the proposal that would enact a really costly tax on sales, and we can get into some of those details, but OBI is leading the coalition against Measure 118.
Tell us about those details, because now everybody's going to want to know.
Yeah. So in 48 days, when ballots start to get mailed out in mid-October, voters will start to see in their hands is a decision on Measure 118, which imposes a tax on the sale of goods and services in Oregon. It raises about $7 billion in new revenue every year. And there are no product exemptions. It applies to food, fuel, insurance, even medicine. And that tax on sales, the new revenue generated from that, goes to a program where the proponents behind this measure envision a redistribution of that revenue in equal payments to folks across the state. Basically, anyone living in Oregon for more than 200 days in that tax year would get an equal payment. And what we're really concerned about is what this measure is going to do to prices at a time when Oregonians can least afford it. It's going to have inflationary effect. There's no guarantee anyone's going to get that money. The legislature can amend this measure and repurpose the money in a manner they see fit, so it's a blank check. We're also really concerned about a gross receipts tax like this compounding. It can be applied at every step of the supply chain, which means by the time a product gets to the end consumer at that final point of sale, it could have been taxed 2, 3, 4, maybe even 5 times. So we are leading a coalition of a wide and diverse coalition to defeat this measure.
Is there a website that we can go to?
Yeah, we encourage everyone to go to our site, which is noonmeasure118.com, noonmeasure118.com. So people can get the latest facts. We'll be keeping that site updated with news and information. And they can also see the growing coalition united in opposition.
Tell us about, if you can, what is the reason for this? Who's funding this?
So I can't speculate what's in the minds of the people who brought this to us. Voters are going to have to read the facts and come to their own conclusion on that. What we know is that there's one petitioner who is a gentleman from Portland, but the signature gathering effort, the paid signature gathering effort that they used to qualify this for the 2024 ballot, 97% of the money spent on that signature gathering effort came from really just a few donors in California. And again, can't speculate as to their motives or why, but what we know is they have given voters a decision, a really important decision in Measure 118. And we hope everyone joins in saying no to this proposal, which those funders, by the way, don't have to pay for.
So it's another out-of-state
It is,
group.
In fact. Drawing on 2 decades service on the Ways and Means Committee, I'd like to just point out a few of the things in a little more detail than Angela did. Let me start, though, by congratulating OBI and Angela for stepping up and providing
some
leadership for this. This has been attempted in the past, but it's OBI, Oregon Business and Industries, that has really stepped up to take the lead and is the catalytic part of pulling together this ever-growing coalition. I do want to reinforce, please go to the website. It's No on Measure 118. It gives you an opportunity to do a variety of things. It'll allow you to donate because fighting this back is not going to be inexpensive. There also is a join tab that would give people the opportunity to lend their name or their business to the endorsers that are saying this is bad business for government, for Oregon. A couple of things that you ought to think about. At a time when our governor is talking about the need for housing, the example that Angela just used, where a product involved in building a house could be taxed at multiple steps. So picture, if you will, a tree that is on somebody's property. The tree is cut down, it's milled, it's sent to the wholesaler, it's sent to the retailer. And at the end of that line, where every aspect of milling the wood into a usable consumer product is taxed, it could add as many as times 4 the taxes to build a new house. And so if you just picture a standard piece of wood, a 2x4, we all want to shop Oregon. This disproportionately hurts those Oregon growers that are producing the trees. The timber industry is already under assault in this state, but now you add this onerous tax on all of the production and the milling and the preparation for consumer usage and nailing it into a house. And then everybody's going to go, why is it so much more expensive to build a house? Well, dear God, this tax is going to add to the cost of a house exponentially.
Well, and people are demonizing timber and have been for a long time, as you know, uniquely, Betsy. But I think people forget that timber goes into building houses.
Yeah.
So that point that you just made is... that's going to blow some people's minds.
It will. This tax is going to make housing, one of Governor Kotek's priorities, infinitely more expensive. Now, let me just touch on one other thing that Angela said. Anybody that can prove that they've lived here for 200 days is eligible for this rebate. And if you go to the Legislative Revenue website, Legislative Revenue Office is one of a handful of nonpartisan offices that produce analysis and information for the legislature. The chief revenue officer, a guy named Dr. Chris Alanak, has written a 22 or 25 page analysis of what this measure will do. Now, it's written by a PhD economist, so this isn't exactly light reading. It's slogged through a bunch of charts and graphs, but what he summarizes is this blows a giant hole in the general fund, which is being used more and more to fund more and more agency operations and is the default position for legislators that want to spend money. So we blow a giant, upwards of $1 billion hole in the general fund. I've heard it as high as $3 billion. So that's going to have the result of reducing available funding for schools and other essential services. But let's go back to this $200 or to 200 days in Oregon. All of us that are Oregonians are entitled to this check. How do you go down and prove somebody has been living in a tent at the corner of 3rd and Everett for 200 days? What if it's 199? What if it's 201? What kind of bureaucracy forms to go down and checks out whether or not some person has been living in a tent village? How does the check get to them? Is somebody expected to bring it down to them? And at a time when we're desperately trying to clear crime out of downtown Portland, giving a number of people who suffer from the scourge of addiction a great big sack of money in their hand, I think one could logically draw the conclusion is going to accelerate and expedite the drug abuse that is happening, I mean, literally right outside the room where we're talking.
Deaths. Because we're talking about fentanyl, so we know it's going to be death.
So this is an interesting juxtaposition. It's being sold basically as, do you want free money? But what it will likely result in is vulnerable Oregonians losing benefits while reducing the flow of federal dollars into our state.
Yeah, I want to touch on something there too. I mean, Oregonians know, people know, there's no such thing as a free lunch, or free money is never free, whichever, pick your cliche. It's there for a reason. We know it's true. Oregonians are going to have to pay for this. Right now in Oregon, households are spending $11,000 more to buy the same things they were purchasing just 3 years ago in 2021. That's a report that was done at the federal level. We can share that with you. But that's $11,000 more for every household already to buy the same things they were buying 3 years ago. You add another chunk of inflation thanks to this costly tax on sales. And again, we mentioned this at the top. Oregon doesn't have a food tax. Oregon doesn't have a medicine tax, but we will. This is a tax on sales without exception.
And I think most people would say that's a regressive tax.
It is. Economists have long considered gross receipts taxes to be regressive taxes. The Legislative Revenue Office report that Betsy mentioned calls that out specifically, that it's low-income and fixed-income households that are hit the hardest by the tax increases. You know, right now it's the... listeners might be listening to this at some future point in time, but we're sitting here right before Labor Day as students are going back to school.
Yeah.
People are buying school supplies. They're buying food for lunches. The school districts themselves are buying supplies, food for lunches, things like that. Local and state governments will see higher prices. The healthcare system will see higher prices, and it just exacerbates throughout this economy. And I think Oregonians are smart enough to see through that, but as you mentioned, a lot of people don't know this is going to be on their ballot.
I think it's probably going to be sold as a UBI, right? As a universal basic income, Andrew Yang style.
That's exactly. Plus, it will vilify the very corporations that create the jobs that help drive our economy. Because I know Angela's already said this. I'm going to say it again just for the benefit of putting an exclamation point. This tax is on gross sales, and it applies to a business, whether they make a lot of money or even loses money, or the business is going out of business.
Gross sales of any business in Oregon?
Well, so the technicality is that this amends the corporate minimum statutes. So right now, they're focused on corporations. But the direct tax implications are one thing. The indirect implications are another thing. But keep in mind, we talked about how the legislature could modify this measure so that the money could be redirected potentially. The legislature can also modify this in a number of other ways, including looping in other businesses, lowering the sales threshold at which the tax applies, et cetera. So this could actually get worse over time.
And let's, for people who don't know, and there may be plenty of people who don't know, let's talk about the difference between net and gross. I mean, this means if this is a tax before all of the things that business is spending money on, right?
Right. So take a low-margin business, construction, restaurants, grocery
stores. I mean, restaurants comes to mind immediately.
Yeah, so take a Main Street restaurant that might not itself be directly taxed under this scheme because of the way they're organized or
sure.
sales they have in total, et cetera. So the proponents might lead people to believe that they won't be affected because the tax doesn't apply to them. Except you're exactly right. They run a low margin business and they're going to have no choice but to raise menu prices when the internet service to run their card swipe machine goes up, when the cable for the television in the bar goes up, not to mention food, beverages, napkins,
literally every supply,
insurance for their employees, cleaning supplies, you name it, advertising costs. So that independent restaurant that was already on low margins, already trying to make it go and employ people in the community, is going to have to pay this tax indirectly through higher prices on all of its inputs. And then they're going to end up being in a position where they've got to raise prices, cut jobs, potentially close. This is the reality that independent businesses are going to be facing.
This might sound crazy, but it just sounds like anybody who thinks they're going to be getting free money is going to end up spending. They could end up spending more than whatever this quote unquote free money is to make up for all these complications. This just makes me think of that corporate activity tax that everybody passed. And now when I look at like a receipt or, the legislature, now when I look at a receipt or something and it says cat tax, and it might be a restaurant, it could be anything. I know exactly what it is. I know what that's about. We're all paying for that. That's not some punishment on big business. That's something we're paying for.
Businesses passed it right straight through.
And this will happen too.
It absolutely will. And it'll come in seen and unseen ways when you think about the cumulative effect on these low margin businesses. And I just think of the number of people that are employed there, grocery stores,
right,
especially. Grocery stores have had such a tough go of it recently with retail theft and discussion of mergers and acquisitions. And now to find out that a service that we all rely on, which is the place to go buy things that we all eat, are going to be faced with this kind of a problem. It's interesting to see how many coalitions are coming together to oppose this. Our governor, Tina Kotek, has come out in opposition. She's very concerned about the huge hole in the state budget and the essential services that are available for low-wage and working families. Right now, for example, if some of this redistribution of wealth affects someone who is on public services getting thrown off of those public services, the state is going to be expected to pick up the delta. Whether they're federal services or they're state services. And that's all people are going to be turning to the general fund and asking the general fund to pick up that that difference.
And like you said, what's important, people are going to poo-poo that. But what they maybe missed that you talked about earlier is schools are funded, at least in part, through the general fund. There are so many essentials that Oregonians really care about that are funded through the quote-unquote general fund.
Absolutely. And if you think about the bureaucracy that is associated at, it just permeates all of this. How do you decide who's on benefits and if those benefits are withdrawn because their income exceeds the amount that would have triggered their eligibility for benefits? Who makes that determination? As a working senator, I helped adjudicate I don't know how many unemployment claims when it's impossible or virtually impossible for an individual Oregonian to call up an agency and say, look, this bad thing has happened to me. Will you help me work through the bureaucracy? If we start denying people health care benefits and other federal or state benefits, the bureaucracy that'll build up around trying to restore those benefits is going to be astronomical and is going to cost a fortune to just help ordinary people, some of whom are not sophisticated in interacting with the government.
So then it limits access, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The Department of Administrative Services put out a memo this summer that was part of the state's process to do things like the financial impact statement and the explanatory statement, those things that accompany the ballot that voters will receive. And in the memo, the Department of Revenue, for example, mentioned that they estimate needing 199 new people within the Department of Revenue to help determine eligibility, to help administer this, and to help prevent fraud. So that's 199 new bodies for that piece of this bureaucracy.
Where does that money come from?
That comes, so a portion of the tax revenue is siphoned off at the top for administrative functions.
But all of those people cost money. And if they become state employees,
allowed pensions.
I was just going to say they qualify for.
There we go with PERS.
Yep, they all qualify for PERS. And so the built-in hidden costs of this are unbelievable. Those are the real pecuniary money costs. Let's talk about other things, though, in terms of making Oregon products and companies less competitive. Let's talk about Oregon's penchant to want to be first in the nation to try stuff that results in our reputational loss. We look like idiots. We were the ones that stepped up and decriminalized drugs. And lo and behold, the legislature has had to come back now and salvage downtown by recriminalizing, which will be happening very shortly. I'll leave aside my editorial comments on the fact that Multnomah County, despite having a wonderful new DA who is violently opposed to what Mike Schmidt is trying to do, Multnomah County will fail in imposing the deflection process, mostly because our current DA, Mike Schmidt, is an obstructionist. He wants to make sure that the deflection doesn't work.
So your point is, regardless of all the work, but I mean, Betsy, you were on here, this program previously on Rational in Portland, you and Max Williams, and everybody who has not heard that should go back and listen to it, because that was about the reform of 110. And you two were key in working tirelessly on that. And one of your points here is we're going to be paying for that measure 110, despite all that hard work, despite that recriminalization, if you will, of drugs that the legislature finally did because of all these other variables. So if we put this in place, if we put this measure that we're talking about today in place, 118, we put that in place, it could take years to unwind, or it may never be unwound.
Exactly. And let me just point out again, but for purpose of emphasis, Angela already talked about this, but there is no guarantee that the new revenues end up in the pockets of Oregonians. This measure gives the Oregon legislature the opportunity to make all sorts of in-stream adjustments. They can change the threshold of $25 million to a lower threshold. They can change the beneficiaries. And so you're ostensibly giving Salem politicians, and I was one of them for a long time, a blank check to change this up any way they want. So there are the knowns, the unknowns, the reputational loss. Once again, Oregon on the front page of international papers being a laughingstock for having done something so excessively stupid.
Yeah, I want to, if I can, I want to talk for a second about the coalition that we've built.
Please.
You know, this campaign came on pretty fast. And a lot of people weren't expecting this to be something that was going to be on the 2024 ballot. And I want to thank the hundreds of businesses and organizations that over the summer, when they have other things to do, over the summer joined our coalition and joined quickly. I want to thank the hundreds of individuals who've signed up. And as Betsy mentioned, people can do that on our website, noonmeasure118.com/join. It's a really simple form. But we've got veterans and veterans organizations, doctors and medical organizations, chambers of commerce and small businesses across the state. We've got farmers and ranchers. We've got labor unions, contractors and builders, small retail shops, large retail shops, manufacturers of different products. The coalition is something I'm really, really proud of. And I think the diversity of that coalition, especially when you add in the political diversity of some of the elected officials. You know, you've got, for example, Congresswoman Val Hoyle.
I saw that.
And Lori Chavez-DeRemer.
Yeah.
You've got
bipartisan
presumptive Congresswoman Maxine Dexter has joined the coalition. You've got Democratic and Republican leaders in the legislature, mayors and commissioners from red counties and blue counties and red cities and blue cities. And I think what that says, and Betsy, you've been around the Capitol a long time. I've been around the Capitol a long time. I've never seen anything like
this. Oh, no. There are times that the people in the Capitol can't agree that it's daytime outside. And you find this diverse coalition of people coming together saying this is bad. The Oregon Center for Public Policy.
Yeah.
They're not a traditional ally of business, and they're opposing this on the grounds that it hurts the most vulnerable. Fixed income, low income. Go ahead with the rest of your list, because I think it's very instructive, but I just want to say, by way of color commentary, you can't get people in Salem to agree on anything. I used to joke I could bring forward a bill for world peace and somebody would object, but we're building a bipartisan, bicameral, bi-everything kind of coalition that is opposed to this measure.
Well, and I think what it says is just how deeply flawed this measure is. There might be some people listening who are like, uh-oh, if all those people are in agreement, maybe we're missing something here. I don't know what to do. But I think the takeaway from that is just how deeply, deeply flawed this measure is. There's a lot not to like about it, to be perfectly frank. And different people have different reasons for opposing it. And we think, as we begin our effort to really talk with voters directly, as we talk with voters in advance of them getting those ballots in mid-October, we think most people are going to catch on. Yes, deeply flawed. Yes, very costly. Largest tax increase in Oregon's history, and consumers are going to pay for it at the end of the day. So I just wanted to point out that coalition because we're proud of it, but also because really it's one of the best signals that people should pick up on for just how flawed this measure is.
Well, and people have asked me, what can I do? And again, I'm going to draw people back to the website and ask them to donate. It doesn't matter how little, but also to lend their most precious asset, their name and their reputation, to say, as an Oregonian, I think this is bad for my place. I think it's bad for my employees. I think it's bad for my family. And so building on that coalition, we'd like to get a mighty tidal wave of opposition. Nobody cares whether you're an R, a D, an independent, a Green Party, communist, it doesn't matter.
I will link to that in the show notes.
Good. This is definitely bad for Oregon.
Because you can click. So I'm going to link to a number of things from noonemeasure118.com. One of them is join. And that allows you to list you and your organization publicly. And then, of course, there's a donate button. And so you'll find that in the show notes, and you can just go ahead and click on that. And it sounds like those are two of the most important things that you can do. And these are simple things. Yeah. I mean, this isn't doorbelling or, you know, this isn't passing out flyers. This is pretty simple. You can just touch your phone and do it.
Yeah. And the fact sheet, the Get the Facts page on the website is great, because at the bottom of it, there's always an updated downloadable PDF. So it's really easy if you're going to an event or community forum or some conversation with friends, you can print some of those off and take them. But you can also just link to that page and share it with your neighbors and networks and friends.
Okay, I'm going to link to that too, because a lot of people who listen to this show are very civically engaged, particularly right now, because of myriad candidates for city council. Then, of course, we've got the mayoral race. We've got two seats open for Multnomah County Commissioner. So there are a lot of interested people at a lot of events. And this is a way to spread the word about this. And it's something that I don't think a lot of people know about. So I'll link to that, too.
Yeah, we appreciate that.
I think that's great, because all of us have our own gatherings, whether it's a neighborhood gathering, whether it's, as you say, the political season is heating up right now. And so the traditional R&D groups are having their, you know, Labor Day is the kickoff of the political season, and they're all gathering. Any chance that anybody that's listening to this and believes how bad this measure is for Oregon should ask for 5 or 10 minutes on an agenda to be able to just share how deleterious this would be. And as Angela has said, download the material and be able to pass it out, so that that has a ripple effect of informing other people about this on the ballot. It's going to be a particularly complicated ballot in Multnomah County.
Oh, my goodness.
Sort of breaking through that noise to get just past all of the candidates and to get to the measures. There are some pretty significant measures that are on the ballot.
Talk about those.
Well, I would say that this one is by far the most dangerous. But there are going to be others, to form a commission to pay legislators and judges more, to be able to sit down and figure out compensation, because the legislature has shied away from doing that.
I mean, that seems important. I don't know much about that measure, but it seems important to pay legislators and judges more. You would know better than I do, Betsy.
Well, there's some complicated
as a legislator, former legislator.
But we're moving more and more towards a professional legislature.
That would be helpful.
Well, yes and no. It used to be that in this sort of sepia tone of the legislature, People came down for 6 months. They did the state's work and they went home. But now we are so inextricably locked at the pocketbook and the policy level with the feds.
Yeah.
We went to this short session, and I don't want to get us off on a tangent,
sure.
But the short session was a bill of goods that Oregonians got sold. The idea was to come back in and check agency performance against agency-approved budgets and deal with real emergencies like forest fire payments and that sort of thing. But it has morphed into a second bite at the apple for every bad idea that didn't make it during the long session. So you couldn't get something done in 6 months. Now you're going to come back and do it in 6 weeks. The point that I'm trying to make here is people need to look for the unintended consequences in many of these ballot measures. We're going to be asked to change the way that we vote. And I think right now with Multnomah County going into this ranked choice voting that we're going to see how poorly or how well it works. I'm prognosticating that it is not going to be the smooth operation that the proponents suggested. But we're being asked to think about that at the state level. So I would just beg people, read your voters' pamphlets, study the measures, talk to your friends and neighbors, do independent study on some of these, go to their websites. If you've got questions, there are plenty of places to go to get answers. Don't just reflexively be told how to vote because, well, all of the D's are voting this way or all of the R's are voting this way. As Angela has very skillfully pointed out, this particular ballot measure, no one won 118 has this broad coalition of all kinds of parties, all kinds of interests, saying this is not in Oregon's interest.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's a bipartisan coalition, and the reality is most of the population in Oregon, and particularly certainly in the legislature, but most of the population in Oregon seems to go Democrat, at least when it comes to the president. And it sounds to me like there's no shortage of Democrats who are against this.
Oh, absolutely. And organizations that are generally associated with a more progressive point of view. Tax Fairness Oregon has come out in opposition. Now, in my experience as a legislature, that's a legislator. That's a group that has never met a tax they didn't like.
Wow.
They don't like this one.
They called it a hot mess.
And so there are Republican leadership, Democrat leadership, all with quotes that I think are available on the website talking about how this is this ballot measure 118 is bad for Oregon. But it's been interesting for me to see, again, Oregon Center for Public Policy, Tax Fairness. These are groups that you would not necessarily associate with an anti-tax measure.
Yeah, I see what Angela was talking about. I'm going to link to this in the show notes, too. It's on taxfairnessoregon.net, and that's the tagline at the beginning of this webpage, is that 118 you quoted it perfectly. 118 is a hot mess. We read bills and follow the money. And it says if it passes, it's dramatically going to change our tax and spend policy, and that it might be simple in concept, but the way it ended up being designed and what's going to happen is it's going to be they're saying it's going to be fatally flawed, and don't be deceived by this idea that you're just going to get a check. Yeah. I mean, they didn't use those words, but that is clearly, I mean, I'm using the word deceive, but as I read this, this is powerful language from Tax Fairness Oregon mm-hmm. against this.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, this is really sort of high school economics. When you have before you the largest tax increase on states in state history, a nearly $7 billion a year tax burden, a tax that's on sales of goods and services without exception, not on a company's income or profit, as Betsy pointed out, you're going to end up with companies forced to cut jobs, close, raise prices, or some combination. And that's why Measure 118 forces higher consumer prices at the worst possible time. People are reeling from years of inflation. We talked about how it costs an average household $11,000 more today than it did 3 years ago for the same goods. And this is only going to exacerbate those costs. It's going to hurt the families who can least afford it. It's going to continue to increase already sky-high cost of living. And voters are going to see through it. They're going to know free money is never free. And at the end of the day, they also know they might never see that money anyway, because the legislature can modify this. They can use it as a blank check for other purposes. And it's going to make Oregon companies less competitive because of the way it's structured, the companies that are going to have to pay for it, the fact that it's a tax throughout the supply chain. And all that's going to end up raising billions of dollars, yet blowing a hole in the state budget at the same time.
Billions with a B. Yeah.
Billions with a B. And so it's just all around. It's a really costly measure in so many ways. I've said it before. I'll say it again. It's just so deeply flawed. I'm really glad we're having this conversation, because we want people to know about it. We want people to join that coalition. We want people to learn more, because we think it's going to be pretty clear that people should be voting no at the end of the day.
Angela's done a wonderful job of summarizing. I'm not going to repeat what she said. I'm going to talk a little bit about the mechanics. I mentioned earlier that Labor Day weekend is generally the kickoff of the really hardcore political season. And for everybody that's listening to this, there is a politician out there that wants your vote and wants your money and will be doing town halls and public forums. And I would urge you to attend those forums. Ask them point blank during the Q&A, how do you feel about 118? Make that one of the thresholds about how you decide who to support in a legislative or a congressional race. The congressional folks may say this isn't applicable only in the state. That's not true. Anybody that represents Oregon in an elected leadership capacity ought to have a point of view about this ballot measure, because it will hurt our beloved Oregon. To quote Peter Courtney, Oregon, my Oregon, is going to be badly, badly hurt by this. So between now and Election Day in November, attend those public meetings. Weigh in on your social media. Listen to the people that you trust that you believe are knowledgeable about this ballot measure. Go to the website, No on Measure 118. Again, join the coalition. Make a contribution. Kristen's going to provide a lot of the mechanical link-ups to make it as easy as possible.
Yeah, all that will be in the show notes.
People to be informed. And look under the hood hard on this one, because you used the word deceiving. I think that the simplistic version of, hi, you want some free money, really does deceive the fact that it's going to cost you in the end. There's no such thing as a free ride. And be very, very careful, because what you wish for may be ultimately extremely dangerous, costly for your families.
Oh, boy. I mean, I just feel like Oregonians have learned a lot about that. Yeah. Well,
we appreciate you making this forum available to us. It's a respected forum, and I hope that the people who have listened today and agree with us will spread the word. If they have questions, go to the website or call Oregon Business and Industries, call you. There are plenty of ways to get factual information that is not hyperbolic, can be backed up with research and analysis from the state's nonpartisan offices to make sure that an informed electorate doesn't get fooled like they did on ballot measure 110, which legalized drugs. That sounded great on its face. You know, should you go to jail, go to the joint for a joint? And the answer was no. Well, that simplistic approach belies the fact that that was a very, very bad measure for Oregon. And this follows in that bad measure for Oregon tradition. So be an informed voter and use every pathway and methodology to make sure you've got the facts.
I'm also going to link to Oregon Business and Industries webpage. I think this is really important. Maybe a lot of people don't know this, but it was the Associated Oregon Industries was founded in Salem in 1895, according to this webpage. And Oregon Business Association was founded in 2000 as a nonpartisan voice for collaboration and problem solving. The members employ more than 250,000 Oregonians. I mean, that's a lot of jobs.
Yeah, when I'm not working on this campaign, it's an honor and a privilege. My day job is running OBI, and it's I just every day I'm humbled at the opportunity to do that. I'm grateful for the faith that those members have put into me and my team to advocate on their behalf, because you're right. Our members employ 250,000 Oregonians, but at the end of the day, we represent the entire business and industry ecosystem in Oregon. And we say this all the time, you know, there's nothing weak. We can't do anything as a society if we don't have a healthy private sector. It's the private sector that generates the wealth that pays for individual prosperity through those jobs, philanthropy, through corporate or individual contributions,
government.
And government services. You can't do any of it without a healthy, robust economic ecosystem. And unfortunately, Oregon's competitiveness is slipping. We have for too long taken for granted the natural benefits we have, whether that's our geography, the lifestyle, the beauty, and we are sliding against states that are happy to recruit businesses away from Oregon. They're happy to have Oregon companies relocate or expand elsewhere. And at OBI, our mission is a healthy, prosperous, competitive economy. And that's what we need. Measure 118 is certainly a threat to that. So that's our project du jour, if you will. But meanwhile, we're advancing legislative agendas and initiatives on a wide range of fronts. And thank you. We encourage people to go and learn about the policy work we do.
There is policy work. There's not just policy work. There's research work. I mean, I'm looking at it right now. There are research papers about things that I think a lot of people would be interested in that they wouldn't expect to find on here, like a report for K-12 education funding.
Yeah, businesses have a vested interest in a quality K-12 education system, both because it prepares the workforce of tomorrow, it helps attract and retain the workforce of today, and they're paying for a lot of it through business taxes and individual taxes into the general fund, which we've talked about earlier. So we put out just last week, actually, an objective look at the sources and distributions of money in the K-12 system, because we know that that is a constant topic, rightfully so,
yeah.
But we need to all be singing from the same set of facts first. We also, the many people in Portland will be familiar with the tax study that came out a couple years ago that noted that Portland has effectively the highest tax rates for individuals in the country. That was an OBI Foundation report.
Was it really? See, I didn't even. So is that must have been what Anthony Effinger pulled from when he did that Willamette Week article. They left. And I didn't. So I didn't know that data came from you. I mean, that is really important data.
Yeah. So we commissioned Ernst & Young to do a study on the business tax burden in the state, and then had them look a little more closely at the Portland metropolitan area. So yeah, OBI is busy. We've got a lot going on. And I, while I have the chance and a microphone, I'm going to again thank my team, because while a couple of us have basically been focused entirely on defeating Measure 118, the rest of the team is working hard to prepare for the 2025 legislative session. I think the number right now is they're sitting on about 30 different rulemaking committees and work groups representing business. They're working hard. They're doing a great job.
I might just add that it's not just joining the coalition to defeat 118. You can also access OBI through your business to join. They're constantly looking for members. And as Angela said in the beginning, they've got a geographic dispersal all over the state of Oregon. It makes the publications and the research available for members. My husband's business is a member. And it's a valuable tool in the business landscape of a state that we want to have a prosperous economy in. So if you're thinking about what cash a company can expend, I would submit that a membership in OBI is a good way to be plugged into a front row seat on what's happening in the business ecosystem of Oregon.
Well, and gosh, I mean, it just, a lot of people are not going to know about this measure until they listen to a lot of people listening to this podcast. They won't have known about this measure. And so I am going to also link to the joint information for Oregon business and industry, because that will give you, as Betsy just said, some insight into what's coming down the pike. And it sounds to me like this Measure 118 started being put together before y'all started talking about it. And that means they have a head start. And so that means this is important.
Yeah, they filed this measure, actually first attempted to get this measure on in the 2022 election, withdrew it. I don't know why, you'd have to ask them. Refiled it almost 2 years ago now in the fall of 2022 for this 2024 election. And we've been monitoring it ever since then. We had some legal challenges that we filed against the ballot title. We don't think it's accurate or fair. We think it's misleading.
What is the status of that? Do you know?
Well, that all gets resolved before they can even start gathering signatures. So the Supreme Court ruled on the final ballot title February,
Okay, so the point is the signatures have now been gathered and it will be on the ballot.
Yeah. It will be on the ballot. So we've been watching it for a couple of years. It became a reality this summer. August 1 is when it got assigned its measure number. So if people are wondering why they hadn't heard about it, that's why it happened late.
Well, also, ballot measure 110 and fixing that was taking a lot of the oxygen out of the room. People were having buyer's remorse and they were focused on that. It's especially important to have these watchdog groups that are available to the legislators and to the legislature. And again, I'm going to make a plug that OBI is a dues expense that you should willingly want to pay. One last link that I might suggest that you make is to Ken Boddy's show, Eye on Northwest Politics. Angela appeared on it. It was broadcast last week. I don't know when the program was taped, but it was Angela going toe-to-toe with one of the Oregon petitioners, and I would submit, having watched the show, that Angela just mopped the floor with him. She had facts and figures and good information, and it made the case for ballot measure 118 look pretty weak. And so if you want to
see that, I'll go ahead and link to that.
See the CEO of Oregon Business and Industry at work, that Ken Boddy show was a thing of beauty for those of us that think this ballot measure is a very bad idea for our Oregon.
Yeah, that was on COIN. And it thank you, Betsy. That's a great point. Anybody who wants to hear more about this and what does this debate actually look like, and hear from the other side. I think it's important. We should hear from this chief petitioner. It looks like Antonio Gisbert, which I may have just mutilated his name, hopefully not, but it looks like he was the chief petitioner and the pro side of this. And then of course, Angela Wilhelms, who's here on this program today, was the no on 118. If you want to hear both sides of this, and I think it's important that you do, I'm going to go ahead and link to that because there's not only a video, there is a article about sort of the takeaways from this debate. And it's just, I just think it's important to be informed. And when people ask questions, and they will, I mean, smart people, I think as a whole, Oregonians are smart and they're rational, and they're going to be wondering, well, what is the pro argument to this? And it's important to understand the arguments on the other side. And then understand, as you said, Betsy, Angela was able to easily rebut those and then understand what that rebuttal looks like.
Precisely. It was a good half hour watch. And
Thank you for doing that, Angela.
I was very proud of the team that is putting together the case in opposition to ballot measure 118.
Well, thank you. But the thing you said in all of that I really want to focus on for just one sec is facts and figures. You aren't going to see our campaign talking in hyperbole or gross speculation, or what ifs, or what we hope, you know, happens or doesn't happen. We use facts, we use figures, we use research, we use data, because, you know, we've seen things like this before. Sequels are generally not as good, and this is a repeat of a conversation that we don't want to have this conversation over and over again. And so everything we put out is going to be researched and cited and fact-based. And I think that's important because that's what Oregonians deserve. That's what voters deserve to hear. And so that's what they're going to get out of the campaign. People might, you know, sometimes wish I was a little more dramatic, but my job is facts. My job is information. And that's what we're going to be talking to voters about.
Well, and I think what's important is not only are you not speaking in hyperbole or conjecture, you're very astute and good at taking this data and summarizing it. Because as we've just talked about, this upcoming election, it's a presidential election. I think a lot of people are going to be voting in it, but by golly, it's daunting to think about all the information and all the data. And so it's important to have somebody like you, Angela, to help sum that up for us in a non-hyperbolic, non-conjectured way.
Yeah, we're happy to do it, and people can always get info the site. And I am not a Portland resident, but my thoughts are with you all as you embark on that election this fall. I want to give a shout out to, I don't remember who at the Oregonian did it, but I just saw a video last night where one of the Oregonian reporters did a a little YouTube video using donuts and an office vote for their favorite donut to try to explain the new, what is it, multi-winner, multi-member, ranked choice voting.
Multi-member, and it's not just ranked choice, single transferable.
I can't even do it.
Yep.
We don't even know the name of it. What could possibly go wrong?
Right,
here?
Right.
Yeah, so my thoughts
are ever done it before, yeah, so it's got to be great, right?
Exactly. My thoughts are with all the voters as they look at their ballots this fall, but especially those of you in Portland who have that entire new system to navigate.
Was that Shane Kavanaugh by any chance? It looks like it may have been. I'm going to link to it, but I know Shane did at least an article about that. And then within the article is the video. So I'll go ahead and link to that too, because I know people are going to be interested in that. What else should we know, if anything, Angela and Betsy, about Measure 118 that we haven't talked about?
I would say there's a certain sense of urgency because ballots are going to start coming out very soon. I think many of us think in terms of election days in November.
Right.
But the real fact of the matter is that material will start being pro and con disseminated. Ballots will start coming out. And so I would submit that there's a great sense of urgency to get informed.
Yeah, you said October, and actually I had forgotten that that's when all of that information is going to start coming out, and you're going to be getting flyers, and everybody is going to be deluged with mailers.
Yeah. October 16th is when ballots start getting mailed out.
Okay.
People will start voting that weekend.
October 16th. Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah. So there is a sense of urgency. I just appreciate the opportunity to help talk about this. That's what we're doing now, is trying to raise awareness. We think when voters read the information, we think when they learn more on our website, knowonmeasure118.com, they're going to come to the same conclusions we have. We just got to get the word out. Like you said, it's noisy out there.
Thanks again for the opportunity to be on your program and help disseminate that word.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Betsy Johnson and Angela Wilhelms on Know on Measure 118. If you want more information about this, please check out the links in the show notes. And of course, from there are all sorts of places you can go for this kind of information. Thanks again for joining us.